It's Your Money with the Investor Coach, Paul Nichols. The show that pulls back the curtain on the financial service industry and exposes the truth about traditional financial planning. Paul Nichols is the president of Financial Abundance, an independent registered investment advisory firm with offices in State College in Lewisburg. He is a member of the National Ethics Bureau, the Better Business Bureau, the Chamber of Business and Industry Center County, and a member of Strategic Coach Quarterly Four.
Welcome to the show. It's Your Money. My name is Paul Nichols. I'm the investor coach and your host. I hope this finds you well. It's another beautiful Saturday. What's that mean? Saturday morning means it's time for Coach's Corner. You've probably already heard Tim Rogers and Ken Pash. And now I come on for a couple hours to talk about money. And we have a whole slew. That's right, I said slew, S-L-E-W, a whole slew of fixed facts and figures and things that we want to share with you. And once again, I'm joined by Luke Miller. What would your title be, Luke? What are you exactly?
I'm your right-hand man.
The right-hand man. Right, yeah.
Your go-to guy.
He's the muscle of the operation. We would just start calling him Guido
I think that's a muscle of the operation.
Well, hey, folks, I hope this finds you well. I hope you're having a wonderful day. I've got a lot of information to share with you. You know, we go to great lengths, don't we, Luke, to prepare
for this show?
Excessive lengths. And I have to... give a shout out to all those people that listen on a regular basis, because we have quite a following. We are starting to understand, and want to appreciate all of you that do listen on a regular basis. And if you haven't heard, we're actually going to be going to another radio station, which we'll talk. You'll be hearing more announcements about that later. We're pretty excited about that. I shouldn't say going to another one, right, Luke?
Yeah, you're not going to another one. I guess we're going to be featured. In addition to another one.
That is the whole Coach's Corner lineup. But let me give you an overview of what we're going to talk about today. We're going to give you a market update. We want to include every week now a market update, because we want you to have the facts and the figures and how do you know how you're really doing. We're going to do a market update. We're going to introduce a new segment that we're going to do every week as well, besides the market update. We've kind of revamping the show a little bit, Luke.
Yeah, we spent some time on that in the past weeks. Just trying to make it a little more listener-friendly.
Yeah, and so what we're working on is doing a market update every week, and I'll explain to you what that is in a moment. It's probably different than what you would normally be expecting. We're going to talk about the Basics 101. We're going to do a segment every week called Basics 101. This week, it's going to be on IRAs, Roths, and 401ks. Then we're going to do our normal strategic spotlight, which this week I have a pretty interesting module that I'm going to teach you called Conscious Investing for Peace of Mind. You do not want to miss that. Luke, you've reviewed that course.
That's an awesome course. Yeah. Really puts it into a new perspective.
Helps people understand that they can or cannot be part of the problem, really, I guess. Our own psyche, the way that we're wired, right?
Very much, yes.
The way we're hardwired. We have a case study, but I decided I didn't have enough time to really dig into it like I wanted to. It was a case we've done, but I had to review it. So we're going to forego that this week. But every week, we're going to be working hard on a case study. And then, of course, our must-answer question of the week, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. So let's get into it. I've got a little bit of news, Luke, that I thought I would share with the folks. This is something that's kind of interesting. You know, I've been hammering taxes, right?
Big time.
And, you know, we have a big concern about it in our practice, don't we?
That's one of the major focuses that I see as the clients come in. I mean, people don't realize exactly how big of a deal taxes are. As weird as that sounds, when you actually break it down and show it to them, they're almost shocked.
Especially with the demographics that are happening in the country.
Right.
Nobody's talking about it. They're not talking about longevity. They're not talking about a declining workforce. They're not talking about the highest tax or tax needs, supposedly, that we've ever had in our country. And it's going to be a serious issue down the road. In fact, unless something funny happens between now and the end of the year, that being 2009, will be the last year for the 35% tax bracket. Did you know that, Luke?
I did not know that.
Yes, of course. Beginning in 2010, the Bush tax cuts expire and will return to a top tax bracket of 39.6%.
Wow. That's huge.
This represents not a 4% increase, but a 13.1% increase in the top tax bracket. Now, some of you out there are saying, well, I'm not in the top tax bracket. I don't have to worry about it. Well, it's going to affect more and more tax brackets moving forward, I believe. This, of course, assumes that the President and Congress don't increase it further. This will necessitate even more careful tax planning. And we want to remind everyone that while taxes are important when it comes to investing, economics remain the number one reason to purchase or sell an investment. Investment decisions should not be made solely for tax-related reasons. But let me tell you, boys and girls, it's going to have to be a huge factor. You know, it goes back to what we talk about all the time. Do you believe, in your heart of hearts, do you believe taxes are going to go up, go down, or stay the same?
In the long run, I guess my question is, when's the last time they went down?
Well, and how many times have we asked that? We've asked that of thousands of people, right, Luke?
Yeah,
at How many
least.
People ever said they're going to go down?
I've never heard one.
How many people say they're going to stay the same?
Every one of them.
Every single person believes they're going to go up higher. Well, if taxes are going to be higher, why postpone paying them? I know this goes against a lot of what you all have been taught through the years, but it doesn't make it wrong. The fact of the matter is, when you start to look at it, if you believe taxes are going to go up, I mean, look, could you not make an argument, Luke? Could I not make an argument to a guy, and let's just pull up numbers out of the hat. Let's say the guy had $100,000, and it was an IRA.
Okay, nice
it's
and
taxable,
round.
Taxable, okay? So we know it's taxable at his income rate. Now, let's not use an IRA. Let's use, because we know you're going to get hammered on IRAs, let's just use an after-tax account. Where the guy's paying taxes and he's got long-term capital gains.
An after-tax non-Roth account.
Right, after-tax non-Roth account. So there's no tax breaks. He's taxed as earned, okay? So he's taxed as earned every year on his income tax rate, okay, for the dividends. Mm-hmm. Dividends go in as a ordinary income.
Right.
But the actual appreciation is long-term capital gains. I mean, couldn't you make an argument to a guy that has a $100,000 capital gain and say, look, let's pay it. Let's pull it all out, pay the 15% long-term capital gain. It's the lowest tax you're ever going to pay in your life, unless you are destitute and have no money. Okay,
well, then you're not going to have $100,000.
Yeah, you're not going to have $100,000. It's the lowest tax you'll ever pay in your life, and then put that in a position where it's tax-free moving forward. Not tax deferred anymore, but tax free.
Tax free. That sounds like a unicorn.
I know it sounds like Jack and his magic beans, right?
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, there's all kinds of tax. You know, and I'm not talking about tax free multiple muni bonds. There's lots of strategies out there, folks. But anyway, does it make sense to postpone paying tax? Now, am I suggesting everybody go out and liquidate all their accounts, Luke?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Do you have a secret bank account? Talking about liquidating accounts. Do you have a secret bank account overseas in which you have been hiding money from the IRS for years? Now, no one probably in this. No one here has that type of thing. But regardless of whether it is a super secretive Switzerland, the Caribbean, or some other remote island anywhere in the U.S., anywhere in the world, the IRS is determined to go after taxpayers who've been hiding assets and income in foreign banks. However, the kindler, gentler IRS is giving U.S. taxpayers 6 months to step forward and fess up.
Wow, that's awfully nice of them.
It is nice of them. If you do, the penalties will be reduced, and the taxpayer will likely not have to face criminal prosecution.
Criminal.
And we want to avoid criminal prosecution for sure. Any kind of prosecution for that, or persecution for that matter. That doesn't mean that honestly, at this late date, will come cheaply. So what we're saying is honesty is not going to come too cheap here. Taxpayers will have to pay 6 years worth of VAT taxes in this example, plus interest. Additionally, there will be a 25% penalty for each year the tax returns were not filed. That would be foreign money in foreign accounts. Okay, not your U.S., but you know the foreign
right,
money.
The stuff you've been hiding.
Yeah. And then the alternative, there will be a 20% penalty if the return was filed, but the return did not include the information about the money held outside the U.S. Okay, so you get a 5% break.
Wow.
There is also the potential of a 20% penalty being in imposed equally to the highest aggregate value of these secret foreign account assets at any point during the last 6 years.
I have no idea what that means, but it doesn't sound good.
All that means is if you got money hidden, fess up in the next 6 months, you won't be criminally prosecuted, but you're going to be fined and slapped around a little bit.
It'll cost you less, though. It beats prison.
Yeah, and I've never been to prison, but I can imagine it probably beats it. Now, some guys out there saying, well, I've been married for 20 years. What do you call that? No, don't even go there, Luke. Come on.
Hey, I didn't say
it. Your wife might be listening.
Yeah, I haven't been married 20 years, so it wasn't me.
Well, yeah. And we know there's two types of married men, right? Henpicked and damn liars.
Wow.
Which category do you fall in?
Yes.
I'm henpicked, buddy. But I've been pecked by the right hen.
I've heard that somewhere.
Yeah, you like that. Over the past 8 months, as stocks have stumbled badly, investors have looked to bonds to provide some stabilization. During 2008, government bonds held up well during the flight to quality, while corporate municipal bonds suffered from the liquidity crisis. Investors are now starting to give corporate municipal bonds a new look. However, there is still a lot of talk concerning potential defaults. Historically, high-grade corporate bonds have only fluctuated at a rate of 2.1%, and municipal bonds have defaulted at a rate of just 0.01%, which is minute, okay? But a slowing economy and lower tax revenue could drive defaults above historical levels. Another big concern for bonds going forward will be the inflation rate. Should all the stimulus kick in and create inflation, which I wonder if that's going to happen... Think inflation is going to go up?
Be a pretty good chance.
And you know,
of that.
We're not doom and gloomers, are we? I mean, you are a little bit. No, I'm joking.
Hey, you know. We're realists.
No, but I'm a positive. I'm an optimistic.
You're positive. Girl. I'm going to put myself a little more middle of the road.
Okay. All right.
Not quite as optimistic
okay,
as you.
But I'm an abundant guy, man. I'm an abundant thinker, not a scarcity thinker. But should all stimulus kick in and create inflation, it will drive interest rates up and bond prices down. Of course. If you are happy with the interest rate you're receiving and intend to hold onto the bond to maturity, this should not be an issue. You know, for those people that you may not know, if you hold a bond, it's going to fluctuate as time goes by. But let's say you have a 30-year bond. You know whenever that matures, you're absolutely going to get the premium on that.
Right, right.
So if you hold it to maturity, you're always going to get your money back. And then the idea is interest along the way.
The only concern there, though, would be interest or inflation being rampant, as some might believe it's going to be, might decrease the value a little bit. Of usable money.
That's true. When you start to look at, you know, the buying power.
Right. You're looking at today's dollars compared to tomorrow's.
Exactly. And when you look at buying power, it's interesting because if you think about it, your dollar has more buying power today than it's ever going to have.
Right. I don't see deflation happening anytime soon.
So let me ask you a question. If your dollar has more buying power today than it ever has, would it make sense to pay off non-preferred debt with today's dollars or tomorrow's dollars?
Tomorrow's dollars.
What does everybody do?
Pay it off now.
I know. You know, and it's just because they don't get it. They don't understand. And it's because nobody's teaching it, right?
Well, and it's the whole concept of debt. Everyone has this impression that any debt is bad.
Yeah, and some debt is bad.
Right, but they're looking at it as all debt.
I know. It's ridiculous. It's not all bad. What corporation doesn't have debt?
Right.
What is a bond?
It's debt.
It's a debt instrument.
What's a bank?
It's a debt. What's a bank's greatest asset?
It's their debt.
That's right. They're depositors. You know, it's interesting this perception that people have of debt. I'll tell you, folks, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, friends and foes. Mark Paul's words here. I'm not an expert in everything, but I am an expert in a few things, and I will tell you this: I can guarantee you that inflation's going up and taxes are going up. I don't see how that can't. A numbers-crunching guy can't look at the numbers. In fact, you don't believe me? Go to the government's website, GAO, the Government Accounting Office website, and review that website and tell me that you don't agree that inflation and taxes are going up in the future. So the question becomes, well, would I rather have liquidity and buying power at today's dollars or no liquidity and less buying power at tomorrow's dollars? It's kind of a trick question,
yeah,
right? That's a little question.
That's a little tough.
I set that one up, yeah, you know. Anyway, we're not going to focus on debt. You just got me on that subject of bonds. I got on that subject of bonds and debt, and I wanted to talk about it. You're listening to It's Your Money with Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. Every Saturday morning, we pull back the curtain on the financial industry and expose the truth about money and investing. We believe understanding plus education leads to clarity and confidence that can and will result in peace of mind. See, we believe, right, Luke? It doesn't matter. We believe that you don't need to know everything if you have a coach teaching you the right few right things, whether it be a personal trainer or a teacher or investor coach or whatever.
Any aspect of your life. Right. Yeah, you don't need to know everything. You can't know everything.
Yeah. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. Welcome back to It's Your Money. This is Paul Nichols, the investor coach and your host. I'm joined by Luke Miller, who's going to be joining us every so often, just talking about this, that, and the other thing. It's nice to have someone to, as a soundboard that knows what I'm talking about. And of course, we're going to continue with like Kids Corner and hopefully having Lou back on. You know, Lou, Lou's a great guy. We love to have him on the show. And
The normal high rating occurrences will keep coming on.
Yeah. Good. And we got some more interviews lined up, and I'll tell you one thing that's interesting. You know, all the interviews that we've done, Luke, have all been national people, or best, you know, authors of nationals. We haven't had any local business people on, have we?
That's something we should probably fix, huh?
We're going to work on that. We're going to work hard on that. In fact, I talked to a young guy today who's a new architect, and I think it'd be great to have him on. Chad. We met Chad this morning, and we have a business group. By the way, for those, let's go ahead and plug this real quick. Luke, let's talk about BNI for a minute. There's an organization called Business Network International. There's about 5,000 chapters worldwide, and we're forming a chapter. In fact, we've just formed it here in State College. We've got about 20, I think, different business people in it. If you are a business person, a business owner, whether it be a drywall hanger or a president of a bank, it makes no difference whether you be a entrepreneur or even someone who represents your business. BNI is a great organization. We meet together once a week, and we basically pass referrals on to each other. We like Chad, for example. He's with BNI. He came into the office today, and we spent some time together so he can get to know me and I can get to know him. And I believe there's some people that in our practice, that clients that would benefit from Chad's expertise. And how would you describe BNI, Luke?
BNI is a kind of a give-to-get situation where, you know, the idea is we all know people who need different services, and we're in this group where, say we know someone who needs their home to be mitigated. There's a pretty good chance. I'm pretty sure we have someone in the group who,
or a house appraiser or electrician,
virtually anything.
Bankers are in that, attorneys.
Exactly.
Now we could use a good CPA.
Need a CPA.
Hard to find a good CPA out there. I'm telling you, it's difficult. It is like, it's like finding a needle in a haystack, a good CPA.
Yeah, but it's probably a little better to find that than the needle in the haystack.
Yeah.
A little bit
definitely
more rewarding.
You know, they're worth the weight in gold when you find a good one.
Keep them.
Absolutely. Anyway, let's get on to, you know what we're going to do here? Let's do our market. Or you had something else you want to say?
Well, we need to tell them. We need to tell them how to find out about BNI.
Yeah. Let's do that.
They could just call our office, probably be the easiest way.
Or they can go to BNI.com.
BNI.com.
Now, Brian Allen is spearheading that. BA, you know Brian Allen. A lot of people may know Brian from when he played basketball with Penn State.
Pretty well known in the area.
Is he?
He's a former radio personality as well.
Yeah, he did ESPN, I believe, for a while. He's a mortgage guy. He's a pretty sharp guy. You can contact Brian Allen, or you can contact our office, 867-5745. You can go to BNI.com. That's BravoNovemberIndian.com, BNI.com. Or they can just show up at the Autoport. We do it every Thursday at 7 a.m., bright and early. You know, we get up before God does in order to make that meeting. No, I'm joking.
You're going to, you know, there's some farmers out there and there's some other people who get up even earlier.
Oh,
than
I can't even imagine some of these folks that get up and take care of, God bless them, you know. Of course, they go to bed early too. It's a different thing, you know. Anyway.
Let's hope.
So, if you're someone who's a fairly new business owner or established business that wants to continue to build your business, propagate, get together with people that are like-minded, that really want to become what we're really working at doing is creating synergy amongst a group of people so that we can really service our clients with any need that they may have from a holistic viewpoint. Does that make sense, or does that sound like a bunch of gobbledygook?
No, that was actually pretty clear, a lot clearer than what I said.
Wonderful. Good. I appreciate that. All right. You know what? Let's move on. We got away from our first segment. It got away from the market update, but this is something that we want to do every week. And I'll tell you why this is important. Most people have no idea how their investments are doing, and they don't know where to go to check them. You know, I'll have somebody come in the office, or I'll talk to them, and they'll say, yeah, I got 20% last year. And I start talking to them a little bit. 20% on your whole portfolio? Well, no, 20% on this one investment. And I said, okay, great. You know, what's your whole portfolio? Well, I really don't know. What are your fees? Well, I really don't know. And so we have that conversation. But what I want to do is get people to understand what they need to look at when it comes to the market. And there's really, you got to understand that our viewpoint is we believe the market's efficient. We believe in a free market system. We believe that the market has always gone up. It's like walking up a flight of stairs with the yo-yo. About one every 3 years is down, about two of every 3 years is up. So overall, the market's going to go up. And we realize that a really well-diversified portfolio is going to have some asset classes that are fairly mundane from time to time. Does that make sense?
That's kind of the goal, isn't it?
Well, we don't want it all to have mundane returns, but
right. But you'd want some of it to be a little more volatile than other parts.
And it's not really volatility now. I don't want to confuse people. I like the way you're thinking, but it's not volatility. What we're trying to do is we realize that if you own the entire global market, which would include, you know, large companies, small companies, value companies, growth companies, cash, bonds, and international small companies, international large companies. If you own the entire global marketplace, some of your asset classes are going to be down while other ones are up. They're all not going to be up at the same time.
Right.
And it's rare that they're all down at the same time. Now, 2008 was a bit of an anomaly in that regard.
But even still, you said, I think you said there were one or two countries that were up.
Yeah, Chile last year, 9% in Chile. So
everything wasn't down.
Yeah, but the point is that in order to have a well-diversified portfolio, folks, not all of it's going to be up. If all of it's going to be up, you're chasing the market and you're missing other asset classes.
You're missing the values.
Yeah, and we're not going to get into market timing and stock picking and track record investing and how that doesn't work. I mean, we've talked about that before, and we'll be getting into it as time goes by more in the future. But how do you know how your portfolio is doing? Well, here's how we know. What we do is we check all of the indexes in the world and find out how is our asset class, how is that mutual fund or that investment that represents, for example, large companies, how is that asset class doing compared to the index that we're trying to not necessarily replicate, but understanding that we want large, you know, large companies. For example, some people, why is it they always do the Dow and NASDAQ on the news?
Don't know.
You know, I've never understood that either, because the Dow represents 30 companies.
That's
30
nothing.
Very large U.S. companies. Now, that Dow number would be okay for just your large asset class, right?
Right.
The asset class of your portfolio that represents large, but it's not going to be indicative of the rest of your portfolio.
It shouldn't be.
Well, if it is, you got a problem, okay? Because if the Dow is down, then it stands to reason that probably your large cap U.S.
would be down,
okay? But that doesn't mean the rest of it's down. So what we want to do is every week just give you a market update, and this is an easy way to tell how the overall health of the world is doing as it relates to the market. So let's talk about that, okay? Let's go ahead. Now, what indexes do we want to lay out for them? And we're going to kind of explain this, and every week we'll try to make it simpler as time goes by.
Do we want to go one at a time, or do you want to,
yeah,
need
let's
to
go
read
one
off the list?
And then,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, let's start right off here with the Russell 2500.
Now, what is the Russell 2500? The Russell 2500 index measures the performance of the small to mid-cap range of companies. So this Russell 2500 tells you how your small companies are doing. How are they doing up to year-to-date?
Year-to-date, we're down just under 2%.
And how are we doing for this last, what is that, month? Is that
month to date? Yeah. It's actually up 10.67%.
So small caps are up 10%.
Month to date.
In this month, okay, but overall we're still down about 2%.
Right.
So if you don't have any small caps in your portfolio, then looking at the Russell 2500 index makes no sense. But if you have small companies, how are they doing? Well, compare it to the Russell 2500. Is your return below or above or right in line with that? If they're right in line with that, what's that tell you, Luke?
It means life is good.
That means life is good and that you have a well-diversified asset class of small companies. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the next one.
Next one is going to be the famous S&P 500.
The S&P 500.
The monster.
Okay, what is S&P 500? It is large U.S. companies. Okay, so the S&P 500 is really an index that encompasses large U.S. companies.
Well, and the interesting thing there, I'll sidetrack just a quick second. That's another one of those indexes that just you see everywhere.
You see it a lot, and all it represents is your large growth company. That's it.
But it's made, it's put out there to look like it's a snapshot of the entire market.
It's a snapshot of how our large companies are doing in the country, which is kind of indicative of our overall economic condition. But you can't look at just at the S&P 500 and say, oh, my portfolio's down or my portfolio's up, because that should only represent a portion of your portfolio in a well-diversified portfolio. So how's the S&P doing for the year?
Year-to-date, we're down just under 6%.
Okay, so it's down. How are we doing month-to-date?
Month-to-date, another up. We're up 6.5%.
Okay, so overall we're down. This last month hasn't been too bad to us, but overall we're down in the S&P. Now, if you had a well-diversified portfolio for the month, then you would have some U.S. companies that are down, and you'd have some small companies that are up, right?
Yeah.
If you had it, okay. Now, we've got about 2 minutes left here. What would be the next one?
Russell 1000 Value.
Russell 1000 Value Index measures the performance of the large cap value segment. So this is not S&P 500 would be growth companies, but the Russell 1000 Value would be value companies, right?
Right.
What's the difference?
Value is going to be cheaper company. There's room for improvement.
Yeah, they're considered a value company is considered an unexcellent company. Doesn't mean it's just distressed, but a growth company would be like a Walmart. A value company would be like a Kmart. We should expect a higher return on value companies because it costs more for them to do business because they're not like an excellent growth company like Walmart. Does that make sense?
That's
so
perfectly clear.
So how is this asset class doing? That would be your large cap value. How's it doing for the year?
Year to date, we are minus 10%.
Minus 10% in the large company value for the year. How are we doing month?
We are up 8.1%.
8.1. Okay. So are you starting to get the picture here? We've looked at S&P, large five, that would be large cap growth companies, the Russell 1000, large cap value companies, the Russell 2500, which measures small cap companies. Now, we got about a minute left. Can we do, what's the next one?
Let's go Russell 2000.
Russell 2000 measures the performance of small cap segment of the U.S. Now, how does that differ from the Russell 2500? Is it really represents kind of like micro companies? You can look at it as small cap or micro cap companies. So they'd be smaller than the 2500. Okay,
how are we doing? Real small companies.
Yeah, micro companies.
Let's see. Year to date, we are down about 5.5%.
And month
to date, we are up 11 and a quarter.
Boy, it's been a good month, huh?
Real good month.
Yay, team. Well, folks, what we're trying to do, and we're going to come back after the break because I'm about out of time, is we're trying to give you an overall picture of the market. It's a market update looking at each index that tells us really by the time we go through all these, you'll be able to look at each of them and say, well, how's the world doing right now? For the year, we're down, but for the month, we're up, and hopefully it'll keep going like that. Now, hopefully this isn't confusing you. We're not trying to throw all the numbers at you, but trying to conceptually get you to realize you got to look at different indexes. You just can't look at the S&P 500. You got to look at all of them, and we're going to get into more when we come back. You're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. You'd listen to Tim Rogers and Ken Pash, the other two coaches earlier. We'll be right back on the other side of the break. If you need a second opinion, you know where to get it, right here at Financial Abundance. We do that kind of thing all the time. If you get a set of recommendations or a proposal from an advisor, get a second opinion. We are happy to provide it for you. If you're not sure about what you're doing, or you are not certain about fees, you're not certain about risk, or you're not certain about performance, are you doing what's suitable for your situation? If you're not sure, ask. We are happy to help you figure it out. Just call us at Financial Abundance, 867-5745. Again, it's 867-5745. Or check out our website, financialabundanceinc.com. Welcome back. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. You are listening to It's Your Money, the show that pulls back the curtain on the financial services industry and exposes the truth about money and investing. I hope this finds you well today. Luke is in the studio with me, and what have we been talking about? We've been talking about a market update, haven't we?
That's what we're in the middle of.
We're going to go back to that, and for those people who are just tuning in, we believe that you need to look at the entire global marketplace to figure out how your portfolio is doing. Because in a well-diversified portfolio, you're going to own large companies, small companies, value companies, growth companies, international companies, bonds, cash, etc. So you can't just look at one index, like the Dow, or the S&P, or the NASDAQ, and figure out how your portfolio is doing. Because if your portfolio matches one of the indexes, what's that tell you, Luke?
Then your portfolio, that part of your portfolio, is nicely diversified.
If it's all in one, if you look at S&P and it's indicative of your portfolio, that would be
No. If your whole portfolio, if part of your portfolio would match that, if your large U.S. Companies match the S&P 500, then that portion, then that segment is well diversified.
At least it's doing, it's in tune with what's going on in the market.
Right.
Okay. So we talked about large companies, small companies, and we look at different indexes to compare. Like we looked at the Russell 2500, that compares our small companies. We looked at the Russell 2000 index, that looks at our micro or very small companies. We did the S&P 500, which is made up of U.S. large companies. What's the other one we did? We did do Russell 1000 value.
Yep.
That's made up of U.S. large value companies. So what we're trying to do is give people the indexes that should represent their entire portfolio, and that's how you tell how your portfolio is doing in comparison to the market and current economic conditions. Not your neighbor, not what your buddy did at the water cooler, not the guy that tells you, he never loses any money, and like the Madoff story, when you're down, you still get 2%. When you're up, you get 20%. That kind of horse nonsense. But really, how do we know how our portfolio is doing? So what's the next index that we want to look at and review?
Russell 2000 Value.
Russell 2000 Value measures the performance of small cap value segment of the U.S. equity universe. So this is small cap U.S., the Russell 2000 value. Now, so we talked about small, the Russell 2000 index is micros.
Right.
Russell 2500 is small growth companies, but the Russell 2000 is small value companies. How's that doing for the year?
Year to date, we're down 9.61%.
How about month to date?
We are up 12.5%.
Wow. Boy, I wish it was month instead of year.
Huh? If that switched around, that'd be nice.
But the month, we're doing great. We're getting 10s and 12s and 8s.
Boy, wouldn't it be a shame if you pulled out the end of last month?
You can't time the market. There's no research, empirical. There's no scientific. In fact, every study I read proves that you can't, C-A-N-T, T, can't time the market. Always, every time I say can, I think of my brother-in-law as a Mexican. My brother-in-law's a Mexican, and I always joke around. Are you a Mexican or a Mexicant? We're always joking around. He's got a great sense of humor. But anyway, believe it or not, my nephew's name is Eric Estrada. You ever heard that name before, Eric Estrada?
Yeah. You see ride a motorcycle around for a living?
Yeah, that's funny. My sister's married name is Estrada.
That's
and then
funny.
She married, named her son Eric. And what's really funny is I'm 45. She's about 42, 43. That was one of her teen idols when she was little, was Eric Estrada, the chips guy, right? Most people,
yep.
I mean, he's done other stuff, but that's what most people think of, right?
He might be typecast into
he's that. Typecast, yeah. All right, what do we got? What index is next?
Next, we are MSCI World, excluding the United States.
Yeah, now the MSCI.
MSCI.
Now, that stands for Morgan Stanley Composite Index. Okay, now this World Index is a free-floating, adjusted market capitalization weighted index that is designed to measure the equity market performance of developing markets. So this would be used for like not emerging markets, but for international companies, large international companies. So how are large international, and this would be some of them that they would include. It would include Australia, Austria, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Hong Kong, Ireland, Italy, Japan, Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Portugal, Singapore, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and the United States.
Is there going to be a test on this?
No, there's not going to be a test. But I wanted to make the point. If you're seriously a well-diversified global investor, you're going to be in all those markets.
Right.
Why? Well, because of something called dissimilar price movement. Boy, we're getting into all kinds of stuff, aren't we?
Bouncing around.
Now, let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. What Markowitz won the Nobel Prize for was understanding the concept. He invented the math we use. Harry Markowitz won the Nobel Prize in economics in 1990, along with Merton Miller and William Sharp. And what Markowitz got all his notoriety for was this whole concept of dissimilar price movement. See, he realized that if I owned an umbrella company by itself, or a suntan lotion company by itself, it could be risky.
Very
only
risky.
One or the other, right? Because it doesn't always rain, and the sun's not always shining.
Depends on the weather.
So what he realized was, hey, I can take buy some umbrella companies and some suntan lotion companies, and I'm always going to be up. One of them is always going to be up.
Right,
and you know, theoretically, here we're talking.
It's either going to rain, you're going to need the umbrella, or it's going to be sunny, and you're going to need the sunscreen. If
what
you're me,
realized,
you always need the sunscreen.
That's right. And what he realized was that by combining those two different asset classes, okay, that was a umbrella and suntan lotion, that he in fact increased his return and lowered his volatility. The same is exactly true for international. There are only 39 markets in the world that you can invest in. Really, okay? Now, why did I say 39? These are countries that have a stock market. They have ownership rights. They have human rights in these countries. At least that's what they say, okay? Now, a good example is I want to be invested in Czechoslovakia, but I also want to be invested in Singapore. Why? Because they have total dissimilar price movement. There's very low correlation. In other words, normally when Czech's up, Singapore's down. When Singapore's down, Czech's up. So all those countries I mentioned, you want to be in all of them. Why would you not be? If you're going to be a global investor and have a well-diversified portfolio, and understand, we're not trying to beat the market. What are we trying to do, Luke?
We're trying to get what the market will give us.
That's it, baby. We're just trying to get what the market will bear. Those people that are out trying to beat the market, you can do it. Most people can't. It can be done. But according to Professor Fama from Dartmouth University, $100 billion the U.S. Americans spend on trying to beat the market. So remember, $100 billion... You realize if you're going to try to chase the market and beat the market and outsmart the market, there's going to be a lot of turnover, right?
Tons.
We don't believe in that. We believe you should have a well-diversified portfolio and hold on to it. All we want is market returns. That's it.
Long-term strategy.
That's it, baby. All we want is market returns. Now, that's not to say that it could be a long or shorter term depending on what the mix is, right?
Right.
Conservative versus aggressive and so on. But, boy, you guys, you folks listening, I can't believe I'm giving you all this information. You know how much money do I spend running around the country trying to learn this stuff, Luke?
It's tens of thousands, if
this
not
year,
hundreds.
This year, how many planes have I hopped on already?
What are you up to, four?
You know, it's amazing, folks. I go fly across the country to meet with people to really get a good handle on contrarian and different strategies. And that's why we sound different. Let's be candid. We sound different because I'm hopping on planes and writing checks to people that are leading advisors around the country saying, how are you doing that? How does that work? Why does it work that way? You know, teach me. Man, it's just, oh. We're going to quit giving them so much good stuff, Luke. That's it. You guys are cut off. That's it. 86.
I don't think you can do that.
No,
you open the door.
I open
you
the door.
You open Pandora's box.
But I'm not going to let them slam it on my foot.
Well,
anyway, let's move on. I'm just messing around here. Where are we at?
All right. We are going to go back
to the MSCI.
Correct. And we are going to look at EAFE.
The MSCI, Morgan Stanley Composite Index of EAFE, which is Europe, Australia, and the Far East. It is a free-floating market-adjusted capitalization index that is designed to measure the equity market performance of developed markets, excluding the U.S. and Canada. So this is Europe, Asia, Australia, and the Far East. I used to say Europe, Asia, and the Far East, but that's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. You don't know what you don't know, right?
There you go.
So how is the Morgan Stanley Composite EAFE index doing?
Well, kind of following the trend, year-to-date, we're down. It's down about 9.5%.
Okay.
Month-to-date, we're up. We're up just over 6%.
Okay, so we're ranging from 6 to 12% for the month, but about what?
Right between 8 and 10.
For the year, right?
Right.
Negative.
Right.
We're positive for
down.
The month, negative for the year. All right, where's the next one? Where are we at?
Next one is going to be the same Morgan Stanley Composite Indexed Emerging Markets.
Okay, the Emerging Market Index is a free-floating adjusted market capitalization index that is designed to measure equity performance of emerging markets. What would be an example of an emerging market? An example of that would be Argentina, Brazil, Chile, China, Colombia, Czech, Egypt, Hungary.
You making them up as you go, or what?
Hungary. India, Indonesia, Israel, Korea, Malaysia, Mexico, Morocco, Peru, Philippines, Poland, Russia, South Africa, Taiwan, Thailand, and Turkey. So, excuse me. So we're talking about quite an array of... So how is it doing? How's the emerging markets index doing?
Let's see. Uh-oh. We're bucking the trend. Year to date, we are up.
Oh, my goodness.
Over 10.5%.
Oh, my goodness, ladies and gentlemen. You mean that we're actually up for the year?
Up for the year. A fair amount.
Now, isn't that interesting? Now, let's analyze this for the next couple minutes we got, because I want to make a good point here. Remember earlier this week when the market had dropped, I forget how many, almost 300 points or something?
Yeah, it was a pretty good drop.
The next day, after they figured that in, our portfolio was up, but yet the market went down. How can that be? A client asked me that. He said, Paul, how in the world can your portfolio be up when the market is down?
Well, that emerging markets has a lot to do with it, and I bet rebalancing has a lot to do with it.
That's right. Rebalancing and dividends. You know, they never talk about dividends.
No one talks about dividends.
The appreciation of most people's stock comes about one-third of it comes from dividends.
That's a large amount to not talk about.
I know it is. I know. Whenever these, and it's normally, you know, and I'm in both camps, the insurance camp and the securities camp. It's normally the insurance guy trying to scare the people about being in the market. They don't really give them the whole truth. But then at the same time, the securities guys don't give the whole truth about the insurance market.
Well, it's, it's when you try and sway someone to your side, you're going to tell them the parts that make your case.
That's true. Sometimes self-preservation leads to a morality breakdown.
We can't have that.
No, we can't have that. But we're not judgmental over here. We're just stating the facts, okay?
Well, and that's the beauty of the situation we're in, is we're in both camps. We have one foot in each camp.
Very few guys are in both camps, are they?
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. I'm a
big
proponent of insurance, especially if it's properly structured. And I'm a huge proponent of an academic approach to investing. Because you know what? With peace of mind, we can create peace of mind. If you have... You know, a moving target, how are you ever going to create peace of mind with a constantly moving target?
You can't.
But if you know what you're doing, why you're doing, and how you're doing it, you're going to have more peace about what you're doing. You know what? They only need to know 20 things, right, Luke?
That's not really that much.
Have you watched people come through my office? You've been with me a little over a year now. Have you watched people come through the office, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they started compared to after they work with us for a while and start to really understand, not what Paul says, but understand, because we take the time to teach them. What do you see? You've watched the complexion of people change.
Sure, their demeanor, the way they carry themselves. You know, a lot of these people, they come in and they're meek and they're nervous and they're sketchy. A year later, even less than that. Even I've seen it in a matter of a month or two. If they see you enough, if it's one of those cases. Their whole demeanor changes. They're a lot more comfortable. They know what they're doing and why they're doing it, which they didn't know just a few months before.
The truth will set you free. Education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence, and with confidence comes peace of mind. You're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. We have to end on that note. We'll be back after the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Americans are worried about the economy, and some think stocks may never recover. Hi, Paul Nichols here with some good news. Every bear market in history, like the one we're experiencing right now, has been followed by huge gains in stock prices. After each bear market ended, stock prices rose on average of 38% in just 12 months, according to research from Ibbotson Associates. This means today's market's volatility is not something to fret over, it's something to learn about and understand. If you're confused or scared about what's going on in today's economy, if the headlines have you spooked, call my office at 867-5745 and ask about my Investor Awareness Guide to learn what you should be doing right now to survive in this bear market. To get the guide, call us at Financial Abundance, 867-5745, or check out our website, financialabundanceinc.com. Do it now.
It's Your Money with the Investor Coach, Paul Nichols. The show that pulls back the curtain on the financial service industry and exposes the truth about traditional financial planning. Paul Nichols is the president of Financial Abundance, an independent registered investment advisory firm with offices in State College in Lewisburg. He is a member of the National Ethics Bureau, the Better Business Bureau, the Chamber of Business and Industry Center County, and a member of Strategic Coach Quarterly 4.
Welcome back to It's Your Money with Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. I'm joined by Luke Miller here in the studio, and we're just conversing about different things. We just talked about a market update. Boy, it took us longer than we thought, didn't it?
Yeah, so much for one segment.
Yeah, right. But so we're going to have to kick out the basic segment for this week and bring it back next week. But I think it's important that people understand and get a good basic understanding of how we look at things from an academic viewpoint. We want to own the entire market. And basically realize that the market is efficient. It works. And by owning all the market, we're going to take advantage of whatever asset class is up. You know, we work very hard on education with folks and then supplementing that with more explanation so that people have a good understanding of what's going on. And the goal of that, education plus understanding, leads to clarity and confidence. And clarity and confidence, I have found in my life, often results in peace of mind. So one of the things I want to focus on right now is how do we develop that peace of mind? Because I'll tell you, it is very, very, very rare to find people that are really at peace with their portfolios and exactly what, not just their portfolios, but their overall plan. And we take a holistic approach, right, Luke, to planning.
Well, and we talked about it a little bit in the last hour. We're not just one camp, and that, you know, when you speak holistically, we're the definition of it.
Right.
We're looking at insurance, annuities, long-term care,
taxes,
investing in
income,
the market,
income streams down the road.
Everything you can think of, we've got a plan for it.
Right. One-stop shop. You don't need to be guessing. So what we're really going to focus on this next segment or two, if we have time to finish it, and I'm sure we will, is something that it's another one of our training modules. We have a quarterly training module, roughly right about every quarter for the first 3 years. Somebody's a client, and we have these dinner meetings once a quarter where people get together and we all have a meal, and then we go through a module of training. And this is a module that I've never talked about on the radio. This really comes from our life coaching series, which is a little different than our investment education series. So we have an investor education series, and then we have a life coaching series. And the investor education series really gets into numbers and nitty-gritties and standard deviations and understanding markets and portfolios and all the academic studies behind that. But life coaching really gets into more of understanding how we are, what this human condition, this human experience that we all deal with in our lives and how that affects us. And so really what we want to focus on is trying to help people. The purpose of what we're doing is to provide the opportunity for people to understand the human side of investing. Mm. We really realized that it's most of the times it's not a portfolio problem.
Not at all.
It's a people problem.
Well, and the people cause the portfolio problem.
Yeah. It'd be a combination of the advisor people, or could it be the people themselves, that is the investor. Okay. So peace of mind, what is it? How can we find it? These are questions that plague most investors, right? For multiple reasons, many people do not even believe it is possible.
Took the words right out of my mouth.
To feel peace of mind about investing. And we're going to talk about three strategies that can help lead to peace of mind about investing. Okay? What are the three strategies for attaining peace of mind? Now, here's the problem. And I think you have some stuff in front of you there, Luke, different covers of different magazines. It is hard to create peace of mind, even when you have a good plan. And this is why we do this coaching. We have to constantly reinforce what we're doing and why we're doing it from an academic perspective. Because who are we battling against, Luke?
The media.
The media and all their investment and their investment pornography. And that comes from, you know, whether it be the talking head shows, whether it be some of the people have gotten notoriety as the gurus, so to speak. It comes from the what magazines? The Times, the Moneys, you name it.
Kiplinger's, Newsweek, Smart Money.
I subscribe to some of these magazines, but I look at them as investainment, not serious investment. Now, you can learn some stuff in those magazines. They teach you about this, that, and other thing. But when it comes to their prognostication. Thank you, Poxitani Phil, for that.
I earned my paycheck this week.
You earned it. Okay. It's hard to maintain a peace of mind and clarity and confidence when you're barraged with do this. What are some of the headlines you're reading there?
Well, and these are a little older, but it's still relevant even today. Internet stars of the future.
Okay, that was the cover of what magazine?
Smart Money.
Oh my goodness, okay.
Here's one that kind of cracks me up because they're really not lying. Kiplinger's has one that says, pick stocks like a pro.
Oh my goodness.
Well, heck, I could pick stocks like a pro. I can be wrong just like anyone else
can. I can pick stocks like a pro when I'm using somebody else's money.
It's a lot easier
sure
when
is.
It's not yours.
Gambling.
And you're getting paid.
That's right. I'm getting paid to gamble with your money, Luke.
I like it. How do I get that job?
Yeah, right.
Let's see. How about Newsweek has one? Everyone's getting rich but me.
Now, see, that's the kind of stuff that even if a guy or gal has a well-diversified portfolio and are confident with what they're doing, hey, we're human.
Sure.
You know, we start going, oh, my goodness. It's the old thing you hear. You've heard me say it many, many times. The only people I know that are truly happy are people I don't know well. Once you get to know someone really well, you realize we all have challenges and doubts and concerns. And, you know, hey, nobody's confident all the time. And, you know, oftentimes when we look over the fence and see it's greener on the other side, that's because the dog was peeing there. Okay? normally, and we try to relate this to the younger folks, right? It always sounds greener on the other side. You know, whenever you want to make a change or do something, you can rationalize why you do it. What is rational? Rational lies. In order to get us to perform the way that we want to perform or deal with whatever issue that we're dealing with. So we've got to counter this because it's hard to get peace of mind when we're constantly being barraged by the so-called experts that are saying, do this, don't do this. So what are the three strategies for attaining peace of mind? Well, number one is raise your consciousness. Raise your consciousness. And we're going to break each of these down. You got a comment you want to add to that?
No, it's just be aware of why you feel the way you do.
We're going to break it down, kind of like MC Hammer. Is that the guy? I don't know much about that stuff, but break it down. That's the kids saying that, right?
You're
not far off.
Those darn whippersnappers.
Yeah, right? I sound like an old man when I go
you
in here.
You do. That's what the kids are doing these days.
That's what the kids are doing. Yeah. Okay, three strategies for attaining peace of mind. Number one, raise your consciousness. Number two, understand how an investor's mind works. So we're going to give you a little psychological input today and hopefully help you understand how the investor's mind works. And number three, learn answers to the conscious investor quiz. So we're going to break it down. Okay, we're going to break each of these down. Let's start with number one strategy, increase your level of consciousness. Well, first we have to define what is consciousness. Well, it's being aware of oneself as a thinking being, knowing oneself, knowing what one is doing and why. So consciously, we're aware of our being, we're aware of our surroundings, and we're aware, knowing what we're doing, we're consciously picking up the fork, we're consciously picking up the cup, whatever. That's a conscious decision. But then there's the unconscious, and that's what we got to be careful about, because the unconscious is an automatic thing, isn't it? It's a survival mechanism.
It just happens.
I mean, do you think about what you do when you get up in the morning?
No, I mean, when I get up in the morning.
You automatically do. You know, you go to the bathroom. Zombie. You brush the teeth. You shave. You take a whatever your thing is. Everybody's got their own...
Ritual,
yeah. But oftentimes you don't think about it. There's a lot of things unconsciously that we don't think about. And many times there's unconscious action and unconscious thought. So unconscious action would be something like waking up in the morning, going to the bathroom, brushing your teeth. That's kind of unconscious. That's, you know, that's unconscious action. Does that make sense?
Especially if I have to get up early.
Right. But then you have what we call unconscious thought. Unconscious thought. For example, we call this mind chatter. Unconscious thought is kind of a mind chatter. You know, how am I going to become aware of something that is unconscious? Here's how. Negative thoughts are reflected in how we feel and behave. When you're feeling or behaving negatively, ask yourself, what thought has caused me to feel and behave this way? It's part of being raising your consciousness. Okay?
So you have to pay attention to how you're feeling and figure out why you're feeling that
Teach yourself to make unconscious thought conscious. For example, if Betty had forced herself to become more aware of her negative thoughts, she would have consciously realized how destructive they were. Knowing that, she could have said, Betty, stop thinking that way. It makes you feel terrible. You need to focus on positive thoughts. I'm not a prophet. How would I know that the stock market is going to crash? Or, I have a competent financial advisor. My money has grown every year. Stop this catastrophic thinking. If she had brought her unconscious thought to a conscious level and challenged the negative thoughts that she had, she may have had more peace of mind about her financial future. Now, does that make sense, Luke? Or do you want to expand on that or clarify that in any way?
Well, and that really can go with almost any facet of your life. If, you know, something's bugging you and you don't understand what it is, then it's going to keep bugging you until something changes. So if you can work through your brain and figure out what thoughts are creating this discomfort, then you can counter that. And I think we've all done it at one aspect of our lives or another.
And I'm very, very conscious of this. In fact, what's the 11th commandment, Luke?
Thou shalt not fake thyself out.
And I say it all the time. Thou shalt not fake thyself out. And if you do, shame on you. Not shame on me, shame on you. Okay? The truth will set you free. Who said that?
You did.
And I didn't say that.
Well, you did
I
just now.
I believe William Shankar said it, but it's probably in the Bible even before that. I'm sure it is. Not exact words, but as a man thinketh, so is he. Something along those lines. But this isn't Bible class, right? That's tomorrow morning. Okay? All right. In summary, there are four ways to raise your level of consciousness. So let's talk about this real quick. There are four ways to raise our level of consciousness. Number one. Be more aware of self and the environment. Well, that's fairly simple. Just, you know, be in tune a little bit, okay? Number two, recognize and challenge negative mind chatter, which is what we just talked about. Negative self-talk's the worst thing you can do. That's something I learned many years ago. Positive self-talk, and because it's easy to lie to yourself. It goes back to rationalization. So recognize and challenge negative mind chatter. Number three, replace negative thoughts with positive ones. Now, are we talking about becoming a, what's the word I'm looking for? Just a Pollyanna type of, even though it's negative, looking at it positively?
I picture a Stuart Smalley kind of character.
Stuart Smalley.
From Saturday Night Live. I'm good enough. I'm smart enough. Doggone it, people like me.
All right. So we want to replace negative thoughts with positive ones. That's not with saying we're faking ourselves out and not dealing with the negative world around us. It's just we're going to decide to be a little more positive in our thinking. Again, this is if you want to get peace of mind, telling you how. Number four, get the facts, Jack. Get the facts. If you know the right things, you don't need to know everything. This is why we often say you don't need to know everything, especially if you have an investor coach teaching you the few right things or a coach in any area of your life.
Well, and that kind of goes back to one of the other things you say pretty regularly, and it's the things that you know that isn't true, but you know it to be true in your head, are what causes so much issue.
Yeah, it's what you know that isn't so that often creates the most confusion in our life. It's little tidbits we pick up, and we accept it as fact, but we've never really challenged it.
Right.
It's what my parents told me and their parents told them, and that's the way it is.
Right, right. So we have to be cognizant of that and realize that you don't know everything, and you have to be open to learn, but get the facts and make sure what you do know is accurate and correct. You know, we're coming up on another break. Doggone it, man. The time flies when we're having fun here. Huh? We are talking about the conscious investing for peace of mind. We're talking about how do you get your mind right. You know, and of course, assuming your portfolio is right to start with, but once that's right, how do you get your mind right so that you're not making mistakes? You're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach, with It's Your Money. We'll be right back after the break. How are you feeling right now about your personal finances? Are you confident you're going to be able to retire in comfort and financial security? Probably not, from what recent surveys are telling us. According to the Financial Confidence Survey, only 18% of American workers are very confident they will be able to afford a comfortable retirement. Only 5% of those surveyed said that they are focused on their retirement needs. It doesn't have to be this way. You know you need to deal with your financial future, but you're stuck because you don't know exactly what you should be doing. That's where we come in. Simply call us. We can help you just as we've helped hundreds of others just like you. You can stop worrying about your financial future because you don't have to know everything if you have an investor coach teaching you the few right things. And we are ready to help you. We'll do it for you quickly and painlessly. Just call us at Financial Abundance, 867-5745. Again, it's 867-5745. Or you can visit us at financialabundanceinc.com. Welcome back. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. Hope this finds you well. I'm joined by Luke Miller. You are listening to It's Your Money. Why did we name it It's Your Money? Because it's your money. And we want you to learn how to be a prudent, knowledgeable investor because we believe education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence, which could and may, in fact, result in peace of mind. And ultimately, that's the goal. There's no reason why you should be in strife or losing sleep or not understanding what's going on with your investments. Now, we all, especially as you get older and have more responsibilities and have kids and what have you, at least I can't speak for many ladies I know, but a lot of guys I know, we all internalize things and stress a little bit, you know, worrying about taking care of our family. But one of the things we shouldn't need to worry about is our life savings. We need to make sure that they're prudently invested and or put in a safe position. And, you know, the way I look at things, I mean, 2/3 of my money is absolutely safe. It can't be lost. But 1/3 is very aggressively invested. But that's Paul. That's my portfolio. You know, I'm 45 years old in a couple months. Now, Luke is how old?
I am 29.
Luke's 29. He's got the big 3-0 coming this year. Now, Luke might be a little different, but I think his, I mean, really, your portfolio probably wouldn't look much different than mine, would it?
Not at all.
Understanding what you've learned working with me, right?
Yeah, spending the year here, learning what I have in a short, relatively short period of time, there's no reason to really sway from what you're doing in my situation.
Now, you have a college degree. You're a college-educated fella.
Yep, okay. from the Penn State.
PSU, baby. Now, what was your major?
Business management with a human resources focus.
Isn't that funny? Business management. And how much stuff did you learn in those classes that you've had to cancel out after working with us here?
A ton. A ton. Hit the reset button.
You know, and you know what's funny is a lot of the stuff I learned, it's interesting, is absolutely way off base. And in fact, they test us on it. I mean, some of the strategies are just ridiculous. You actually test it on when you get licensed with the NASD and the Securities and Exchange Commission. I can think of a couple. Dollar cost averaging is a good example. You know, the concept of dollar cost averaging is valid if you are systematically putting money in, but it's not valid if you have a lump sum of money. Does that make sense? In other words, if you have a lump sum of money, what's the best thing to do with it? Dollar cost average it or put it in?
Put it in.
But what does dollar cost averaging teach?
Take your time.
That you're going to be better off share price putting it over a period of time. But when you crunch the numbers, absolutely. There's no way. There's
Doesn't
no comparison.
Make sense.
So dollar cost averaging is often confused with systematic investing. They really shouldn't call it dollar cost averaging because that's, you know, that's a marketing term.
I didn't know that.
It's a market. Think about it. Dollar cost averaging. Oh, yeah, I should get some of that.
Well, it's, yeah, it sounds smart.
Yeah, but not that I'm knocking dollar cost averaging. Don't get the wrong idea. I'm just using that as an example. But we're talking about, what are we talking about? We're talking about creating peace of mind. How do you do it? Conscious investing for creating peace of mind. In the first strategy we talk about, there's three strategies that you want to employ or at least investigate in order to attain peace of mind. One is raise your consciousness. Two, understand how the investor's mind works. And three, learn to answer the conscious investor quiz. Okay? Now, we talked about strategy number one, which was increase your level of confidence, understanding that we have consciousness, understand that we have conscious thinking and unconscious thinking. Unconscious thinking is automatic, but it sometimes creates what we call mind chatter or negative self-talk. What we need to do is we need to practice the four ways to raise our consciousness. Number one, be aware of our environment and self. Number two, recognize and challenge negative mind chatter. Number three, replace negative thoughts with positive ones if possible. That may not be possible. Hopefully it is. And number four, get the facts, Jack. Get the facts, Jack. Okay. That leads us to strategy number two, which is understanding how the investor mind works. Now, this is my favorite part because I'm into this stuff. You know, I'm intrigued why people do what they do.
Yeah, you are a people watcher.
I love
that. You're a people studier. You do enjoy this stuff.
It just amazes me why I do what I do and why people do what they do.
It's a little scary how much you like this stuff, but that's another story.
It's a little scary. Let's talk about this. There's three parts of the investor's mind. You know, your mind. People in general, okay? All right. There are three parts of the investor's brain that are involved in making lifelong financial decisions. They are the cognitive, the instinctive, and the emotional parts. While all three parts are necessarily... While all three parts are necessarily interrelated and are really impossible to separate, the task right now is to examine each part on its own. This way, we can become more aware of how one affects investing choices. So, there's really three parts, the cognitive, the instinctive, and the emotional. So, when we start to look at this, the cognitive is what you know, your knowledge. This can be facts, concepts, statistics, and so forth, right?
Yeah.
Anything to add to that? That's the cognitive.
Logic would be a good place.
Reason,
intelligence.
Intelligence, that would all be cognitive parts of the mind. But we also have another part called the instinctive part. This controls your inborn patterns of behavior. Like people instinctively want to survive, to avoid pain, to be nourished with food, to feel good about themselves, and to experience pleasure. These instincts are at an unconscious level. Kind of what we talked about before, getting up and brushing your teeth, going to the bathroom, eating. I mean, these are just automatic. We don't think about these, right?
Right.
They're instinctual.
Breathing.
They function without our permission. We're born with them. So what would be an example of instinctive?
Pulling your hand away from a hot stove.
Yeah. How we behave. Reaction, intuition, survival. Those would be instinctive. So cognitive is logic, reason, intelligence. Instinctive is how we behave. There's another part, though. What's that part called?
That's going to be emotion.
The emotional. Your feelings. Examples of feelings are glad, sad, mad, anxious, afraid, etc. Most people don't realize the power of emotions. Dale Carnegie, he wrote one of my favorite books, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Dale Carnegie, he has Dale Carnegie courses. He's known to say, quote, "People aren't creatures of logic. They are creatures of emotion."
I can believe that.
And when push comes to shove, all emotions and logic collide. Emotions are the winner. We like to think that as human beings, we behave rationally, that our decisions are always made with our rational or cognitive mind. This is not so. In fact, without getting myself in trouble, we could look at most relationships, husbands and wives, men predominant, as a general rule, I've got to check myself, as a general rule, would you think that men are more logical or emotional?
General rule, you know, I would say men are more logical.
And as a general rule, would you say women are more emotional or logical? Now, there's obviously this, you know, people are different. Everybody's got a different fingerprint. But as a general rule.
Key phrase being general rule, I would say women tend to be more emotional.
And when you think about the clashes that men and women have, what are they generally a result of?
Logic and feelings.
They're generally a result of me using too much logic with my wife or her using too much emotion with me.
That's well said.
Right? And it's always going to... See, I've always said opposites attract. Because what's interesting that I've noticed about people, and again, I love watching people and observing people, counseling and coaching. What I've noticed is opposites attract, and the very thing that attracted you to the person, the very thing that you loved most about that person was generally what you had a deficit in. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You're looking to fill that void.
That's right. But what happens a year after marriage?
Those same things drive you nuts.
The very thing that attracted you to the person is the thing that makes you the most wacky about them, you know? I mean, relationships are funny. Again, we won't get into my grandfather's favorite saying, there's two types of married men, henpicked and damn liars. That's my grandfather, 92-year-old grandfather. I think he has some insight after 92 years. But anyway, we have the cognitive part of our brain, the instinctive part of our brain, and the emotional part of the brain, how we feel, trust, fear, greed, that would be emotional. Now, the conscious investor formula is to understand that we want the cognitive to be greater than, less than the instinctive, right?
Cognitive is less than the instinctive and the emotions.
That's right. It's less than. So the conscious investor formula helps to explain why people may get confused and overwhelmed with this topic of investing. As we explore the three parts of the mind, be aware that when it comes to financial issues, the cognitive portion tends to be overridden by a combination of instinctive and emotional parts. This formula is contrary to the assumption made by most investors that financial investing and investing decisions are primarily made using pure logic. Instead, we will explain how our behavior and feelings takes precedence over what we know. So what we find is that oftentimes our emotion and instinctive override the cognitive.
The logic gets pushed aside.
The logic gets pushed aside. So things we do know, as it relates to investing, what are the rules of investing? There's basically three rules of investing. It's pretty simple. Own equities, diversify and rebalance, and buy low and sell high. It's pretty simple. Okay, those are the three rules of investing. Kind of like, what are the two rules for losing weight?
Eat less and move more.
Okay, but yet you can go into anybody's house in America and probably find a diet book.
Sure. Or, well, and you know, knowing that, I could stand to lose a pound or two, but, you know, the rules are pretty simple.
And the point is that even when we know the rules, we do not necessarily follow them.
There you go.
If everyone was able to consistently implement the three rules of prudent investing, then investors would rarely lose money in investing. Similarly, if we all consistently applied the two simple strategies for how to lose weight, no one would need shelves full of diet books and constantly going on diet programs. But how many people are really the weight they want to be?
I can't believe there's that many.
It's probably not a whole lot, okay? Although it is important to use the cognitive part of the mind to learn the rules of prudent investing, it is practically futile unless we are able to apply them without fail. Let's find out how instincts and emotion tend to interfere with purely rational investing decisions. You know, you hear me say it all the time. People want to use, like long-term care would be a good example. They want to use a logical mindset for an emotional issue. But when it comes to investing, they want to use an emotional mindset for a logical issue. It's interesting. See, what we're dealing with is part one, the cognitive. That's about what we know. And then we look at part two, the instinctive, about how we behave. Now, instinct, inborn tendency or a primal biological urge that motivates behavior. That would be the definition of instinct, right?
Sure.
A inborn tendency or a primal biological urge that motivates behavior, which leads to the survival instinct, okay? The drive to survive is a fundamental human instinct. Although we rarely include it on the to-do list, staying alive has a top priority each day. The simple built-in mechanism that ensures action consistent with survival is based on pain versus pleasure. What would be examples of pain?
Hunger, being cold, being hot. Being lonely.
What would be examples of pleasure?
Pleasure. Being loved. Eating.
Eating, that's a big one.
Eating's a good one. Being warm, being comfortable.
Safety.
Safety.
Okay. So those would be the example of the pains and pleasure. That's what motivates us. You know, the carrot or the stick, so to speak. Okay. As human beings, we tend to move away from and avoid pain because it is perceived as a potential threat to survival. Likewise, we tend to move toward pleasure, associating those activities with an increased probability of survival. The pain versus pleasure instinct for survival is a simple and highly effective human trait. However, this instinct is far from perfect. It can be fooled. Sometimes things that are pleasurable can decrease our chance of survival. By the same token, things that seem painful can actually improve the likelihood of survival. When it comes to investing, instincts can be your worst enemy. Based on the pain versus pleasure principle, investors can easily talk themselves into breaking the rules that the cognitive part of the mind knows are crucial to successful long-term investing. So what are we in essence saying, Luke?
In essence, you're saying that, well, like you said, the system isn't fail-proof. For example, using the health and using survival, we all know that if you're in shape and you're not overweight, that you're going to live longer. But how many of us are going to actually do the exercise and eat the right foods? Obviously, not too many Americans.
Now, how many guys that have a scare like a mild heart attack or a blockage of some kind and got to go through a minor procedure, what is it normally for those types of people? It's a wake-up call, right?
Big time.
Yeah, because then the pain becomes real. It's right there in your face. Now, we know we should be eating right and doing that. All of us know that, okay? Mm-hmm. And, you know, busy days and all that, it's tough to do. But the fact of the matter is that we all know that we should be doing it, and it's not until a significant amount of pain comes into our lives that we make some significant changes. It's kind of a wake-up call. With that being said, you know, we've only got a few seconds here. We're going into the last segment. Can you believe that, Luke, already?
Time
this boggles
flies.
My mind. You're listening to Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. I'm joined by Luke Miller, and we're talking about how do you develop peace of mind as it relates to your investments. We're really getting into the psychological aspect of it so that people can really start to understand what's going on. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to It's Your Money with the Investor Coach, Paul Nichols. I'm joined by my friend and cohort, Luke Miller, here in the studio. And we're talking about conscious investing for peace of mind, Luke. And we only have a little bit of time here to wrap this up. So let's do a recap real quick. We talked about there's three strategies to create peace of mind about your investments. Number one, raise your consciousness. Number two, understand how the investor minds work, which we were just talking about. And number three, learn answers to the conscious investor quiz. And we were talking about the difference, increasing your level of consciousness, understanding the unconscious versus a conscious mind.
Right.
And how four ways to raise your level of consciousness. Number one, be aware of your environment. Two, recognize negative mind chatter, which would be unconscious conversations we have with ourselves, I guess.
As long as you don't answer.
Yeah.
You're okay.
Number three, replace negative thoughts with positive ones. And number four, get the facts. That strategy number one, increase your level of confidence. Number two, consciousness. Strategy number two is understand how the investor mind works. And we were talking about the cognitive versus the instinctive and the emotional aspects of our brain, right? And how they work. And we were kind of comparing that to understanding that sometimes the emotional can override the cognitive. The logic.
Oftentimes
it does. And then we have a built-in survival instinct that creates that situation.
Right.
You know, that pain or pleasure.
Avoid pain, move to pleasure.
Right. Which leads us to part three of our brain and how it works, and that's the emotional part, okay? About how we feel. Emotion, a strong feeling, a complex reaction with both mental and physical components. As much as we like to believe that investing decisions are based on rational thought, more often than not, emotions have the final word. When we look closely, we can usually find an emotional predisposition toward or against a certain investing tactic, or for that matter, anything in our life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It is interesting that no matter what our emotional tendencies may be, we can always find what looks to be purely analytical, factual data to support that view.
You can pretty much make it say whatever you want.
Rationalize, I call
it. You can rationalize.
Rationalize. Our emotional bias, our emotional bias will lead us to overweight the information that validates our perspective while simultaneously minimizing any opposite or opposing data.
Boy, that's kind of like what we talked about way back at the beginning of the show. with which camp you're in.
Yeah, which camp are you in?
You're gonna you're doing it to yourself. You're gonna tell yourself the information you want to hear, and neglect the information you probably should hear.
Yeah, so we're going to find the information that supports our case, and we're going to reject the information that doesn't support it, because that's what we want to happen.
Exactly.
Thou shalt not fake thyself out. Our emotional bias will lead us to overweight the information that validates our perspective while simultaneously minimizing any opposing data. To rise above emotional investing, and that's what we're really trying to get people to focus on, because if they understand what's going on, they're not going to be so emotional.
Right.
Okay. It is important to recognize the emotions that can interfere with prudent, conscious investing. So, I'm going to give you some emotions.
Okay? All right.
Let's talk about this. Name that emotion. We're going to play a game called Name That Emotion, okay? Each statement below, each statement I'm going to read to you, which is from, I'm looking at my guide here, belongs to an emotional investor. We're going to look at each statement and then figure out what emotion is being expressed, okay? So the first statement, it doesn't matter how sophisticated his charts are or how much sense he makes, I just don't feel comfortable with letting him handle my money.
Boy, that sounds like someone who just has a lack of trust.
Lack of trust would be, that would be the emotion, right? Okay. Here's another one. I'm not sure if I should put my money in that fund. Maybe I'll sell some of it tomorrow.
Boy, sounds like buyer's remorse, a little
regret.
Bit of regret.
Yeah, yeah, okay. My boss got 25% on his money and I only made 8%.
Oh, sounds like jealousy or envy.
Could be envy, okay. Again, you don't know the whole story. The only people I know that are truly happy are people I don't know well. I bet when you start looking at your boss's situation, he may have gotten 25% on one thing, but not his whole portfolio.
Yeah, he's not going to brag about the money he lost.
Yeah. Whoever tells you how much money they lost in Vegas, right?
Yeah, right? Everyone comes home a winner.
Everybody's a winner, okay? I wish I'd known that stock was going up. I would have bought more shares.
Someone's getting greedy.
Greedy. You got to watch out for greed, okay? Pigs get rich, hogs get slaughtered. Is that how it works?
Sounds okay. Right.
My dad works
in... Pigs get fat.
What's that?
Pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered.
Yeah, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. That's what I was looking for. The farmers knew that. The Penns Valley crew knew that, Luke, okay? My dad worked at that company all of his life and left his money to me in his will. It would be wrong to sell it to diversify my portfolio.
Boy, we see this one a lot.
I know.
And it's loyalty, but it's a shame.
It's misdirected loyalty, because you wonder if dad knew what you knew now, would he have made the same decisions you're making?
I doubt it.
Yeah, so are you honoring him by keeping a portfolio that has lackluster returns and is not winning?
Or that has the opportunity for you to lose everything in a short period of time.
I think you honor them by doing the right thing and being a good steward and staying ahead of the curve. That's how you honor them, but that's my opinion.
We don't know your dad, so...
Yeah, that's true. What if the market drops tomorrow and I lose it all?
That's just plain out fear.
Well, why do you have money in the market? You know? So the point is, all these emotions are what we need to deal with and understand cognitively how to overcome. But what makes it very difficult is this whole idea of investment pornography. Well, and I know, you know, a lot of people have never heard that before, but...
Well, these emotions are hard enough to deal with on their own, and then every station you turn on has a get-rich-quick scheme, or they're telling you how bad the economy is, or, you know, I'm on Google Finance regularly, and there's always something on there talking about the Great Depression of 2009 there was an ad for the other day. It's all the same stuff. They're just driving you with your emotions.
As consenting adults in the privacy of their own homes, Americans are indulging themselves in investment porn. Shameless stories about performance tickle our prurient financial interest. That came from James Bryant Quinn, Newsweek, 1995. What we have is a challenge here, Luke. We have a challenge of dealing with the instinctive and the emotional times the media that often cloud our cognitive judgment.
Mm-hmm.
In the quest for peace of mind about investing, many investors turn to various sources of so-called expert information. The most common place to seek understanding and enlightenment are the popular media, magazines, newspapers, books, TV, radio, and internet. Hey, I mean, people are listening to our show right here, okay?
Sure.
Unfortunately, we have seen the message we find tend to be based on hype, rhetoric, and manipulation. Instead of offering knowledge and clarity, they often add fuel to the fire with conflicting advice. Almost every magazine you read has the point-counterpoint in it.
Right. Well, and we talked about that last week. Yeah. And the beautiful part there for the magazine is they're always right.
That's right. They're always right. The financial media is often specifically geared to activate and intensify the instinctual urge and emotional decisions of the investor. I think of it as investment pornography. When we factor the media into the conscious investor formula, the cognitive part of the mind does not stand a chance, does not stand a snowball's chance in hell of overriding the emotion which is leading to bad decisions. It's no wonder peace of mind is such an elusive state for the typical investor today. Is this making sense, Luke?
It's crystal clear to me.
Hopefully it's making sense to you folks out there. If you get the facts, raise your level of consciousness, get rid of that negative mind chatter, you're going to have more control over what's going on.
I just want to put a quick note out there. If you just started picking up on this and you missed the beginning of this, next week the show will be on our website. You'll be able to download the entire show, listen to it, if you need to pick up where you didn't catch on. And that's www.financialabundanceinc.com. That's INC.com.
So you can go to the website and listen to radio shows. I think all of them are posted on there. Now, how close are we getting them on iTunes?
We're getting there. It's a little trickier than yours truly is capable of, but
okay,
we've got our tech guy on it.
Yeah, we're hoping Justin's going to help us out. We're hoping to have it on iTunes here so people can just go to iTunes and download it if they want. All this information is on the website, or all you got to do is request it. We can get you a copy of this this guide called The Conscious Investing for Peace of Mind. We'd be happy to get that to you. Let's wrap this up because we've only got a couple minutes left. When investors allow themselves to be largely swayed by instinct, emotion, and the media, the result is rarely a well-constructed portfolio specifically designed to achieve the greatest return with the least amount of risk. Instead, it is a haphazard portfolio that leaves its owner uncertain and afraid. In effect, these investors are throwing the dice since they have absolutely no control over what numbers will turn up. Creating an investment plan based on instinct and emotion could be compared to gambling or speculating with money that is intended to last a lifetime. What we're trying to do is give people the information and the knowledge and the understanding that they can override this instinctive emotional
pool.
What is it?
Pool.
Pool, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, we education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence that can result in peace of mind. You know what, Luke? We're not going to have time to go into the 20 questions, but all people got to do is call the office or go to the website. They can take an investor quiz that has five of them on the website. They can call us. Folks, we have a wealth of information, books, guides, CDs, DVDs. Have you ever seen a financial outfit that has as much stuff as we have? I mean, educational.
Never.
Is there any component of our practice that doesn't include an educational aspect, a book, a guide, a CD, a DVD, or something to it?
There are nuggets of information in everything we give out.
The truth will set you free. You don't have to wonder and have doubt about your investments, folks. This is not rocket science. The industry wants you to believe it's rocket science, but it's not rocket science. Now, check this out. What month are we in?
April.
April. This is one of the most dangerous months to speculate in stocks.
Really?
Really. What? Did you know what the others are?
No, what are they?
May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December, January, February, and March.
That sounds like all of them, Paul.
Yeah, that's Mark Twain. That was a Mark Twain quote.
That's a good quote.
Speculate. Three ways to know you're speculating versus prudently investing: stock picking, market timing, and track record investing. But we don't have time to get into that. Boy, it's been another eventful show, folks. I hope that you've enjoyed it. I appreciate Luke Miller coming in and helping us out. He's taking time away from his family, just as I am, to be with you and share some stuff with you, some concepts and things that we believe will help you and enrich your life. And we have plenty of information available. If any week we give you so much meat, it's over your head. And it, you know, because you're catching little bits and pieces of not over your ability, but over just, you know, you're not quite up on the terminology and the verbiage. We're a phone call away. 867-5745. You can call our office Monday through Friday, 867-5745. You don't have to worry about getting browbeat or beat up or pitched or anything like that. Our goal is to save the world one investor at a time. And we believe education plus understanding leads to clarity and confidence, resulting in peace of mind. Folks, the truth will set you free. You don't need to know everything if you have an investor coach teaching you the few right things. What do we got going on next week? Luke, do you know?
I'm not sure. What
you know,
we
didn't even have time
week?
To talk about this free book that we were going to give out to people, this e-book called Baby Boomer Blunders.
That's a good one. We'll have to do that
author,
next week.
Yeah, best-selling author Doug Andrew had put together an e-book. When they e-book, it's like a booklet that you can get via email called Baby Boomer Blunders, 10 Financial Mistakes You Can Correct Before It's Too Late. So anybody that might want to request that, we're going to talk about that next week. Next week, we're going to have some case studies. We're going to talk about the power of tax deferral. We're going to be talking about some articles. And we're going to have our basics 101. We're going to have to revisit that next week and come back and talk about IRAs, Roths, 401ks, because a lot of people have misunderstanding about that. So next week, we're going to talk about that. Luke, you're going to be on again next week, I think, right? Unless something changes.
As far as you know.
As far as I know. Hey, folks, I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful day. Spend it with some friends. Spend it with some family. Hey, give somebody really old a call and make sure they're doing okay today, will you? People that you know living by themselves, some elderly people. Just give them a quick call and make sure everything's good. I like to do that every so often. I hope this finds you well. Have a wonderful day. You've been listening to Paul Nichols and Luke Miller with It's Your Money. Have a great day. Do you have a gambling problem, or even worse, does your broker have a gambling problem? Is your hard-earned life savings at risk? How about your kid's college account? Gambling is fine for recreation, but not for your life savings. Hi, Paul Nichols here. I'm the host of It's Your Money, and I want to help you kick your kick the habit and become a prudent investor. My company, Financial Abundance, helps people avoid the hype, scare tactics, and myths that the industry propagates, and we want to help you too. Call my office at 867-5745. Mention that you want to kick the habit to receive a complimentary consultation. That's 867-5745. Or you can visit my website, www.financialabundanceinc.com. While you're there, be sure to check out our Abundance Investor Quiz and find out what type of investor you are. That's www.financialabundanceinc.com. And remember, you don't need to know everything if you have a coach teaching you the few right things.